and welcome to another episode of the Rev VR Podcast. I am your host, Reverend Kyle. How's everybody been? I know it's been a little while since you heard from me. I know I had a lot of fun at SVVR Expo, and you all had a lot of fun listening to things such as the Lunchcast, or maybe you caught Ubercast number 3 with my fellow podcasters, or maybe you were just having a good time watching me barrage the Sixth Sense booth with all of their, questions we need answers. How many of you went and asked for a refund? I'm really interested to know that. So let's get into this episode. This episode is going to be, possibly a tearjerker for some of you. Then again, you may see the reasons for it. I don't know. We'll try to explain it. But this is officially the last episode of the Rev VR Podcast that is going to be posted on Road to VR, the website. Not to be confused with Road to VR, the video game, coming soon, 2018, too. The man you hear giggling in the background is Mr. Ben Lang, chief editor of Road to VR. Ben is joining me for this farewell podcast. Ben, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. And sad to know, but we're excited to see what you do next.
Yes, well, in some of the reasons that this partnership is breaking is sometimes it's just time to move on, and over the course of the next couple weeks you may find that some things may be changing here on the Rev VR Podcast, and a lot of you are having a good time watching me through my Periscope and my YouTube channel. And so, mixing up a little bit of the content and possibly mixing up some delivery methods. And so that's kind of why I'm parting ways with the Road to VR team. Not to say anything bad about my wonderful time with them and their continuing efforts to bring you all of the awesome news in the VR, AR, and MR world. Ben, you and I have known each other for several years now, and it's been a really good relationship, wouldn't you say so?
Yeah, absolutely. So we were just talking a little bit before we kind of kicked this off here, and what I was saying is we've always really enjoyed the very community focus that you've had on it. You've brought a lot of the personalities that are kind of known around the VR community, and of course back in the early days when we first started, the VR quote community is all it really was. Nobody was calling it a VR industry at the time. And there were these recurring, faces, yourself, Road to VR was there, and tons of other people who'd pop up on forums and in videos. And, I think you did a really good job of connecting all those people together. And that's why we've always really, really liked the podcast, and we're very happy to support you. And really, as I said, excited to see what comes next as you kind of change formats and use different weight means of publishing, streaming, and all that sort. But it's really interesting. It was just the community once upon a time, and now we can all very much say the words VR industry, and that is a real thing now.
It is amazing to look back at all the different episodes that we've done together, me and you. We've done points where it's like, okay, let's talk about whatever's hitting the VR community this week or this month, or what are the hot points. We've done daily updates at the end of expos and conventions. I mean, we've done that. Those were always very, very popular episodes. And then, of course, we did the notorious Facebook Acquisition Day episode. That episode will live forever in the books and the annals of VR history. Very, very important. And it's just amazing to see how much that the community has grown. And like you said, talking about an industry, it's just something that years ago we wouldn't have thought to do. So what we're going to do in this episode, just to kind of wax nostalgic, I guess, and then give that format that everybody's always known and loved, is Ben and I are going to go over some of the hot points of the VR scene right now. Well, we can expand it to AR and MR if we want to, and talk about some things that are happening, and then we'll kind of do a wrap up, and just like old times, right, Ben?
Sounds good to me.
Well, good stuff. So, I'm curious, did you actually end up getting a retail version of a Rift sent to you?
So I bought one. I was a Kickstarter backer, and I also put in an order for one when it popped up. And so I have received mine. I was one of those under, 30-minute or so orderees on pre-order day. And the Kickstarter Rift actually, I believe it got sent and nobody signed for it. And I think it got returned. So that's actually still on its way. But yeah, I will have those two units, which is great.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was fortunate to be in, I think my order time was 3 minutes, like 8:03. Nice. And so I was one of the ones that got mine on March 31st, before end of day. It was great. I actually had it delivered to work to make sure somebody would be home to actually receive it. I was very paranoid about it.
So you were one of the people that actually like got them. And then there were all the
right.
The other people. It seemed like they had like a few thousand or whatever. And then there was just a big gap. Big long gap of people who did not get any for a long time.
Here's what's funny for me is that my work at Studio 216, we've done a lot to build experiences for people, and we've been using the DK2, but we're like, okay, well, the consumer version is coming out, so let's each order one. So each of our developers with their separate credit card ordered one that morning, the day that they went live, and I stayed home. I said, well, I'm going to be late to work. I'm going to stay home and hit that F5 button until I get mine ordered. So I ordered my 803, and then they got theirs in by, I want to say 8:27 or 8:37, something like that. So theirs just came. We just got the very first one to our office this past week. So I got mine. Yours? No, I got mine on March 31st, but they didn't get the ones from 8:27 didn't start rolling in until this past week.
Wow. Yeah. That's the kicker. So it was like some people got theirs and people were like, yay, I guess my Rift is coming soon. And then the old unexpected component shortage.
Right, which component X that we'll never know what it is. I actually opened up mine. I took a really good, solid, hard look at the one that I got on the 31st. And then I looked at the one that just came and I was trying to compare them and see what's different between the two. And honestly, I can't see a difference. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. What the component was, whether it was just a shortage or did they have to retool something? I don't know.
We probably won't know for a long time.
Yeah, that'll be one of those pieces of news that come out like, 2 years from now. What was that shortage? Let's talk about it now. Yeah. So other than the Oculus Rift consumer version, I'm sure that you have a Vive as well.
Yep, we've got Vive on hand, Vive Pre, and the retail version. So we did a big old review of both the Rift and the Vive, and it's really exciting that they're finally here. And when I say here, I have to put that asterisk for here for some of us and still on the way for others of us.
Yeah, now, did you notice any differences between the Vive consumer retail version versus the Pre?
Very, very little. I think the head straps are ever so slightly different. I think the IPD knob might have like some ridges on it instead of being smooth. Very, very minor. But yeah, the way that they worded it, when, people remember back to when they kind of announced the Pre, which is also when they kind of announced the delay of the consumer version that they said they're going to ship in Q1 2015, they were like, okay, we're going to put out the Vive Pre. This is going to be kind of a developer kit, like a developer kit 2 of the Vive. Then we're going to put out the consumer version. And they really made it sound like the Pre and the consumer version were going to be two very, two different versions, kind of like the DK1 to the CV1 for the Rift. But really, it ended up being almost the exact same thing.
Yeah, I'm not seeing much difference. I mean, I remember the first time I saw the retail version was actually at GDC this past year. And I noticed that I had my Pre, and I'm sitting there looking at the retail version. I'm like, well, I don't see too much. I noticed the same thing you did, the strap is very different. But other than that, I couldn't see anything very different. I wondered about the lenses. I wondered about the screen. I wondered about everything. And I mean, I did not order a retail version of the Vive because I had a Pre. It seems silly for me to do so. I'm not really sure how many developers did not order one because they had a Pre.
Yeah, I would imagine many. I mean, yeah, I think you'd be hard pressed to put on one and then put on the other and notice any difference.
Yeah, I'm not thinking there's going to be much difference. Now, what about the VK1? I mean, a lot of us have these things just kind of laying around. Is there any value to these things? I mean, do we even know if they still work?
I think that they do still work. I don't know how long that's going to be supported. And for anybody who's confused, the VK1, of course, is the very first Vive development kit, which is a little bigger, a little goofier looking. But yeah, it's heavier and less comfortable, and the screen isn't quite as good. So it's like, if you have a pre, you're definitely going with that. I think you can still dev on them and stuff. It seemed to me like there was not all that many of those out there, and so no one's I don't know any developers personally who kind of still have them in active use. They've all, I think, gotten pretty much replaced by the pre, at least, if not the consumer version.
Yeah, I know I've got mine kind of chilling out here. I have one here at my house. We've got two at the office. One of the nice things about being in Seattle is that Valve is just right up the street. So, hey, I need another dev kit. Is that cool if I come up and get one? And they're like, yeah, sure. And you just go up there and they validate parking and everything. It's wonderful. It's kind of surreal too, because you walk in and for those of you who've never been there before, it's kind of badass. They've got this huge, like, steam, like, candle in the middle of the room. You always see it in the pictures. You know, whenever they take a picture of Gabe or whatever, they always have him standing next to this big, you know, pressure nozzle. And it is, it's right there in the middle of the room. And, you know, they've got toys and placards and, you know, posters up on the wall. It's a badass place to go.
Do they have the Vive anywhere shown and displayed kind of up front there?
You know, they didn't the last time I was there, which was, I'm going to say before the new year. So I guess it was maybe back early December was the last time I was there. So I don't know.
I'm calling it now. If anyone's followed game devs, you know, at all in their life, they will have seen some inside the studio, whatever. And it'll be like, they'll go to Bungie and there'll be like a big Master Chief statue, or they'll go to Valve and, you know, there'll be like a Gordon Freeman, you know, life-size statue. I'm calling it now. In the near future, we're going to see lots of those same things, but those statues, someone will be like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if we put the headset on them? And they'll just be wearing that, you know, some VR headset. And it'll be a big joke.
That's funny. Yeah, if you go to Microsoft, which I've been spending a lot of time there lately, it's kind of funny because you always, in each of the buildings, there's a different statue of something. And there's a lot of Halo statues. And they're all just a little too big to get a HoloLens head onto. So, but yeah, I mean, hell, some of those headsets already kind of look like, you know, they've got helmets on. So
yeah,
it is kind of cool though. You know, speaking of HoloLens, I've been very fortunate now that I can talk about it. Oh, you wouldn't believe how hard it is for me to have had HoloLenses in my possession since August and be told that you're not allowed to talk about it until April.
So let's hear about it. Can we talk about HoloLens? Because I feel like we haven't done it that much.
Yeah, we totally can. I haven't done a whole lot just because of my fear of breaking some NDA with Microsoft. But I've been there a couple times, and they're kind of, you know, for the first time, we've actually met their marketing team, and they're all about, hey, take it out. Because originally when we had it in the office, we had to keep it in a safe. A safe that Microsoft told us that we had to purchase to keep it. And we had this protocol, and you couldn't let it out. I mean, it was very, very secretive, which was...
Yeah, like it was going
to
run off.
Right. It'll end up at a bar somewhere next to an iPhone prototype, yeah.
Never before.
But we've been able to take it out now. I've taken it to the Seattle monthly VR meetup, wore it the whole time. Word of the wise, don't wear HoloLens for too long. All at one time, you get what we call holo halo, this weird red mark on your forehead. Just even after like 20 minutes, you get it. But yeah, we can talk about it all we want now. Now I've talked to the marketing people. I said, you know, I do a podcast and stuff, and I want to start. So today I actually streamed for about an hour and a half earlier this afternoon, and was streaming live from the HoloLens. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. It's good stuff.
So confirm for me whether or not my experience with HoloLens was the norm, which is that I put it on at SVVR in a busy convention hall right there in the middle of the expo floor and was entirely blown away by the quality of the tracking.
Absolutely. Yep. The tracking is solid.
What I saw appeared to be beyond solid. And I was like, is this just a best case scenario? Oddly enough, but that didn't make any sense because there were people, you know, moving around me and all this stuff. And it was just way better than any other AR tracking I've ever seen.
So I have the secret. I can share with you the secret as to why. Mm-hmm. We had the opportunity to sit in a room, several of us developers, and got to sit in a room with the people who do the spatial mapping for HoloLens. And they explained why it's so amazing. Number one is that HPU that Microsoft made us all laugh at when they first announced the HoloLens, the holographic processing unit, that thing does spatial mapping. And that's it. So all that mapping, all that data, all that locking, all that world locking and everything is all being done by that HPU. So it's being offloaded. It's not taking up CPU power. It's not taking up GPU power. It's just tracking. And so it's taking what they're calling RGBD. Mm-hmm. So your standard RGB camera, which is doing, you know, it's doing your regular light and, you know, your color, then your depth, which is coming from two sensors on the top to the left and right of the center sensor. And so it's giving you that depth and the good positional tracking, which is the IMU. And, you know, it's got some centrifugal and that kind of thing going on too. So yeah, it is solid. I mean, the best tracking. And you can actually even output. You could scan a whole room and output it as an FBX file and have basically a 3D scan of your room, and it's pretty damn accurate.
Well, I was blown away, and it was weird. I don't know if it's been upgraded since when HoloLens was first released. I'm sure there have been some tweaks, but fundamentally, can't imagine it's changed that much. But I was just it was so I actually hadn't had a chance to try HoloLens. I just kind of missed it on several different occasions, and so I only got to try it recently, and from the reports I had read, people were just like, yeah, I tried it on. It was like kind of cool, but field of view, whatever. And so I was like, all right, it doesn't sound kind of like breakthrough. And then I tried it myself, and the tracking, as far as I can tell, is a total breakthrough. It's like the first AR tracking, inside-out AR tracking, that to me made me believe like, all right, someone's going to figure out how to make this inside-out AR tracking really good. And I was like, I still need to write something about this. I've been meaning to get around to it, but it's like, I want to know, like, why haven't more people been, like, freaking out about this? Because it's really, really good, and it's a game changer. It is a game changer for AR, because the thing that has been holding AR back entirely has not been – it's been the tracking component. And it feels like it could be solved now.
Here are the drawbacks. So number one is if you have the wrong lighting in a room, you're screwed. That tracking suddenly starts to stutter. If you've got the wrong type of materials that it can scan around, like it has a hard time with matte blacks. It has a hard time with reflective surfaces, which most rooms do have major reflective surfaces in them. It has a hard time with solid whites. Actually, I should say it has a problem with no patterns on a wall. So if you have just a white room with no patterns and nothing breaking it up, it has a really hard time differentiating between the left side of the wall and the right side of the wall. So there's a busy room with a whole bunch of people walking around it with the lights, you know, 40 feet up above you in no like matte black surfaces. Yeah, most convention floors are going to be ideal for that kind of tracking. But try doing it in your home.
Yeah.
And you could have some problems unless you have a room that's specifically built for it.
You know, I foresee some very cool QR code art coming. People will frame and hang on their wall, and it'll be pretty. And it won't technically be, you know, a QR code or a fiducial marker in any sense that it is actually, you know, there's data contained within it. But it'll just be a pattern, you know, to break up your white wall. And we'll say maybe a whole art industry dedicated to making these images that are really just to be there to be an anchor for the visual tracking.
It's funny you say that because Microsoft is already doing stuff like that. Really? I got an opportunity to try the... let's put it this way. I tried an automobile manufacturer's demo. I'm not really sure how much I can talk about the demos that I tried. I tried a demo that they had in a room. They've got this nice, cool studio in Microsoft's campus, Building 92, where they've got these perfectly molded rooms with perfect lighting and perfect everything. And they claim that, oh, this actually represents what somebody's normal living room looks like. I'm like, maybe the Brady Bunch, but other than that, it's it's not. But I tried this thing, and it was funny because I couldn't – originally when I went into the experience, there were two other guys with me, and it was a multi-lens experience. It was networked together. And they said, if you don't see the model in the middle of the table, look at this painting over here on the wall and then look back down. And I was like, I'll be darned, they're using this art on the wall as anchors to identify where you are. So exactly what you just said is already being experimented with.
I'm seeing some, just in my head, some up on, what is that site that lets people sell, like, craft goods?
Oh, Etsy, yeah.
Etsy, yeah, I'm seeing some people, like, selling some G-Clay printed super cool, basically QR code, you know, style paintings. I'd hang those on my wall.
I would totally do that, yep. Very cool.
So HoloLens is a little bit old news at this point. Maybe we should not stop boring people with HoloLens. And anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, I guess along the same lines, did you actually try the Meta 2 demos?
I did try the Meta 2 demos. So it's like between Meta 2's field of view and HoloLens's tracking, there's an amazing product coming down the line. But the Meta 2, so the Meta 2 has a nice wide field of view and a fairly clear and bright display. But the tracking is that I saw was really subpar and just not even close to good enough. And that made me, again, like, AR is not new. It's been around. AR was kind of coming back into vogue before VR was, through a bunch of crappy mobile apps, and which were basically just bad proofs of concept. But the tracking has just been the thing holding it back forever. And so, like, Meta 2 is like, cool, you've got like a wider field of view, but it just doesn't matter until you get the tracking really good. And like I was just saying, yeah, HoloLens kind of made me believe that we're getting close there. So I'm somebody who believes that, after watching this industry for a long time, AR, I think a lot of people think that AR and VR are developmentally on the same timeline. They're right lockstep with each other. But I actually think that AR is where VR was in 2013. I think that it is lagging behind in terms of development for VR. So it's basically going to take longer, much longer to get to consumer AR devices. You know, obviously we don't have them yet while we have consumer VR devices. I think it's going to take several extra years. And for some reason, I think the prevailing notion is that, you know, AR and VR are developmentally right, you know, right on the same timeline. I just don't think that's true. And tracking is really why. It's like, there's tons of neat AR applications and proofs of concept out there, but until the tracking is nailed, none of it's useful. None of it's anything you'd actually be able to want or use. But HoloLens gives me hope that we're getting very near a practical, good enough inside-out positional tracking solution.
Yeah, I can't.
Environmental tracking.
Yeah, I can't agree more with that. I mean, you know, looking at the Meta demo for the first time myself, the Meta 2. I had actually tried the Meta 1 a million years ago, but the Meta 2, you know, their field of view was bigger, but it was shaped kind of like a rounded trapezoid. It was very not square, which kind of threw me off a little bit. But yeah, like you said, the tracking is just so very alpha. That's what I keep telling people. It still feels very alpha. I would not be wanting to purchase this product anytime soon. I think you make a good point to say that 2013, VR in 2013, that like pre-DK2 type of era. That's where AR is right now. And, you know, some developers, some manufacturers are a step or two ahead in one aspect, and then some of them are in, you know, another area where they're benefiting, and you need to see some merging of those concepts to get a good AR. But we need to stop calling it AR, and this is something, I guess, that Microsoft has embedded into my head, is that augmented reality has always been, you look at a screen, and on that screen you see the real world, but then you see something over top of it. And what Microsoft is using is the term MR, mixed reality. And they're really pushing that hard because mixed reality is so very, very different. It separates MR from AR. The devices are different, the technology is different, the needs are different. And so the idea of calling everything AR is, I don't know if Microsoft is going to succeed in causing that to be a misnomer. I mean, what are your thoughts on the actual terminology side of things?
I care very little about what it's called. I really just care about how it works. I think the de facto term is always going to be kind of the most simple. So back in the day, 2011-2012 era, when, you know, kind of pre-Rift, we had some of these headsets, which were commonly called HMDs, aka head-mounted displays. And back then I was like, listen, when this stuff goes mainstream, your average person on the street, like my grandma, for instance, who definitely goes on the streets all the time, is not going to be like, hey, did you see that new head-mounted display or that new HMD? It's just too long and kind of corny of a term. And so I was like, VR headset is what we're going to call it.
Yeah.
Right. So I started putting that down really, really early on that, you know, it's just like, all right, what is it? It's a headset. And what does it do? It does VR. So it's going to be a VR headset. So I don't know that anyone's even going to, we'll probably call it an AR headset. We could call it an MR headset. I don't think that we're going to call it I don't think anyone's going to say, do you see the new mixed reality head mounted display? You know what I mean? Just, it's the most simple term that people will stick in people's heads. And I think AR already has that traction. And so I think mixed reality might have a harder time grabbing on. But again, I don't care that much. I think the distinction between that you made between AR kind of being on, I think what you talked about, like AR has always been kind of like on a screen. Like, you mean you're looking at your phone and then the phone shows the world,
right, right,
the camera, and then there's something on the phone screen. I think AR has always been what Microsoft is calling MR. We've just never had the displays to do it. So we've, like I said, for years and years and years, long before VR was around, or at least kind of this modern era of VR, we've had these really, actually, I shouldn't call them crappy AR apps, but they're just crappy because they're on our phone. And it was like, let me peer through this tiny little window into the real world, and then I can see the augmented part of it. And it's like, I knew no one was going to get their phones out and, you know, hold it up to a magazine cover. It's just such a ridiculous thing. For AR to succeed, we need to have the right display, and that needs to be something that is on our head all the time, that pops up with absolutely no friction. And, you know, frankly, HoloLens's field of view right now is so little that it's not that much different than holding your phone up. It just removes the friction of getting the phone out of your pocket, launching some QR code app bullshit, which never went anywhere. So it's like, yeah, that it needs to be always present on your head for it to be very useful technology. And things like HoloLens are starting to get there, and that's really, really exciting.
Yeah, it's kind of funny for me because I guess having been blessed with the ability to spend a lot of time with the HoloLens is that the field of view limitation starts to fade away the longer you spend in this headset. I mean, you really start to forget the fact that there's a limit. And especially when you do some first-person stuff, you know, you can do some VR things in the HoloLens. It works, and it actually works fairly well. And you start to lose that FOV concept, that thought process. Of course, I've always been the kind of person who's been an advocate for the FOV on the DK1, DK2, CV1 is good enough, and everybody needs to shut up. We don't need 120 degrees, you know, field of view. But that's just me. You know, I'm okay with it because I spend a lot of time in it. But, you know, there is this common thread of people. There's a certain group of people that you meet that when you meet them, they say, VR is just a stopgap until AR can catch up and take over. And that AR is going to be the way that we live our lives, not VR, because VR is so isolating. And that AR is going to be the way to go. And I sometimes laugh at those people because the real answer is what's going to be in the future is going to be a hybrid approach. Mm-hmm. Having both VR and AR capabilities on one headset.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, you can clearly envision use cases where it'd be useful to overlay information onto the real world that kind of augments and benefits what is happening in the real world. And then there's obviously other times where you'd say, hey, let me just, with the same headset on, flip a switch and be able to go into a fully virtualized environment, which doesn't have to have any notion of what my real environment's like. Because there's big challenges to taking your real environment and laying information over it, because the computer has to be, or your headset has to be smart enough to understand everything about your environment. And from a developmental standpoint, there's going to be lots of experiences that are easier to do just by saying, all right, the user, we're just going to take over the whole space and add a virtual, you know, make it a totally virtual environment just for ease of use. Because why, you know, if we don't need to bring in the external environment and design around everyone's unique external environment or, you know, real environment, then why would we bother doing that? Movie theater, for instance, it's like, does it need to be on my wall, or is it easier to just virtualize a massive movie theater by completely taking over the display? And it's probably easier to do the latter there. So I don't think that, like you said, it's going to be this AR is going to be everything, and VR is going to just go away. No, I think totally we're going to just have a hybrid reality headsets, really.
Yeah, and I've been saying this for quite a while now, and I was happy to see our good friend Mark Zuckerberg kind of say the same thing at F8 this year. Is, you know, here's an idea of what it's going to look like in 5 to 7 years. You're going to wake up in the morning, you're going to put your glasses on, and that's it. And that's they're going to look stylish and fashionable and be prescription if you need it. And it's just going to be this ultimate one thing that you put on your head. And we're all going to be okay with it, because most of us wear glasses. And if you don't wear glasses, then you wear sunglasses, or you're experimenting with HMDs, you know, whatever your drug of choice may be. It's not going to be a problem. People are not going to feel weird. Now, that is one thing, though, that people have been saying is, well, you know, I had a really good conversation with somebody recently. They're like, well, don't you think people are going to feel weird that they look odd walking around with these headsets on? I mean, is this a fashion faux pas, or are we creating a new trend here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am of the mind that it could look just completely ridiculous, but if there is a curve of how useful it is and how ridiculous it can look. So there's going to be stuff like, okay, so it could be, if it were just incredible, a headset that was incredibly helpful, like let's say HoloLens was just perfect augmented reality and made your life way better, it could look exactly as it does, which, flank you right now, is too big, you know, like most people would say. But if the experience were just incredibly good and benefited your life, it's like, people aren't going to care as much because it's really helpful as a tool and very useful. But there's a curve there. So it's like, it's got to have that benefit. It's got to have enough benefit to overwhelm kind of the fashion thing. And I think you could make the same argument for even headphones, which you could say, well, headphones, when they first came out, kind of looked really silly to wear around outside of your house because they were very big. So we made them smaller, we made them sleeker, and we made them into earbuds. And everybody's got to remember the wraparound behind the head headphones, which just looked cool, but were definitely less comfortable than the ones that go over your head. And so those faded away. And now we see huge headphones are coming back because they offer better sound quality, and people are willing to look sillier than if they were just wearing little earbuds, and return to those big headphones because they like the trade-off. They're happy with the trade-off between headphones, which are, you know, now big headphones can be even a fashion statement. So it's like, I really think it starts with the practicality and usefulness. And there's the more practical and useful and helpful that the object is, the more willing people will be to look ridiculous with it. And so if it's minimally helpful, then, and it looks ridiculous, they're not going to want to wear it. So it's like, there's this balance there.
I mean, we all know we're talking about Beats by Dre.
Yeah,
and it's a status symbol. you know, they want them to be as big as possible because they want to look like they've got status symbols. I mean, it's mostly kids, you know, sports players, people with a lot of money to throw around, because these things aren't cheap. They're not cheap. It's a status symbol. And so is it possible? I mean, am I getting street cred by wearing my Gear VR out? Not yet.
Soon.
I've tried. Hasn't happened yet, but maybe. But yeah, I like that. You know, the idea of, you know, it got small and then it got big again. I mean, radios did that, you know, got down to transistors and then all the way back up to boom boxes in the 80s. And, you know, I had one of those big cheesy boom boxes that I held up over my shoulder and, you know, go play Phil Collins songs in front of girls' windows with a trench coat. But that, you know, that's just me. you know, Ben, I remember, I believe it was E3, you and I had an opportunity to go and goof off E3 2014. And I remember you and I trying to find a place, and we both pulled our phones out, and I had an Android device, and you were sporting an iPhone. Are you still sporting an iPhone?
I am still sporting an iPhone, and it's a little frustrating because, so like, I have Gear VR and I have a phone that goes with that, and I probably don't use it as much as I would if the phone that you know went into Gear VR was my primary phone, because I don't have it, you know, I don't have that secondary phone with me all the time.
So the reason I bring that up is because I'm really curious. Any thoughts on Apple joining the race here?
Yeah, absolutely. So it really just depends. It really just depends how well VR does. If VR starts to get big, it becomes a big problem for Apple to not be in virtual reality. And that's because their main competitor, of course, is Android, or anyone trying to steal smartphone market share from them. So their goal is to have as many people owning iPhones as they can compared to Android devices. For some people who are on the fence, they're saying, oh, it's time for a new smartphone. I'm on an iPhone right now, and I'm thinking maybe I'll go to Android, or maybe I'll just go to the newest iPhone. And they're looking at the two, and they say, I can't really decide. And they're looking at the bullet points and the specs, and they're just right on the fence. And then they look over to Android, and they see that final little bullet point at the bottom that says, you know, does VR very well. And then they look back to the iPhone, and it's just nothing to do with VR. And they say, oh, all right, cool. And that is that additional tipping point where if everything else is the same, Apple just doesn't have it. And if VR is compelling, that's going to mean a lot of those fence sitting people are gonna go over to the Android side. And that the more successful VR becomes and the more people it starts to lure, the bigger a problem it comes that they don't have an offering. So I think VR is going to be big. I think we all do. And so the question is just kind of when and how. And I think the when is not so clear yet, but it's basically when the pressure mounts to a certain point for Apple. And the how is they will, of course, go for a, you know, as user-friendly thing as they possibly can. And frankly, right now, that would be amazing for VR because, you know, I just spent a couple hours in VR today messing around trying to watch basically a movie with a friend in VR, and it was a painful, painful experience. And the door will be there, I think, for a while for someone to come in and just make the user experience just ridiculously simple. The FaceTime of VR, if you will. You know, Apple made video calling just super straightforward, and people on the iPhone love it for that reason. They will do that Apple thing that they do, which is not necessarily invent anything new, but just make it very polished and easy to use for someone like my mom or my grandma to be able to figure out. And that's where they get their big usership.
See, I'm going to disagree with you. And the big thing that I disagree on, and this is the thing that I think a lot of people miss, is the fact that there are no fence sitters. Or if there are, there are very few. Because you've already got most people have decided on a platform. They've decided on Apple or Android. That's it. There's those few select people who are using Microsoft phones or BlackBerry still because they still think it's 1993. But, you know, you're either an iPhone person or you're an Android person, and that's it. The people who are sitting on the fence, I don't know very many people, and I encourage everybody else to look around and ask, you know, your friends and family, how many people have actually switched between the two multiple times? Mm-hmm. You know, those type of people are very, very rare. You find a platform that you're comfortable with and you stick with it. And so what I'm afraid of, and this is what I'm starting to see, and I'm hoping that this isn't the trend because there's going to be a lot of really, really pissed off people, is that there are a large group of iPhone users who are going to maintain their loyalty to Apple because they know deep down in their hearts that Apple will figure out VR eventually and come and save the day.
Yeah. Well, so I look at these sorts of scenarios, and I think your point is totally fair. There may not be that many just kind of today native fence sitters where every time they go to upgrade a phone, they're just, oh, I don't know. But I look at these things as pressures. And the pressure on the user is, does this phone offer a feature that I want and can't get with what I have right now? So let's say, for instance, let's say Facebook initially was an Android only thing, and the iPhone users were like, whatever, you know, when it launched, because not that many people use Facebook. It's not very important to me. It's not very important to what I do. And as Facebook grew and grew and grew and became this thing where for a lot of people, it's like, if you don't have a Facebook account, you're not really kind of part of modern society almost. Then it's like, well, shit, I still can't, you know, this is hypothetical, but oh shit, I still can't get Facebook on my iPhone, and now it's kind of important and I kind of need to do that. So it's like, if VR gets to that point where like people in their daily lives or their friends and family are being like, hey, like jump into VR, let's watch this video together, and like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't because I don't have an Android phone. It's just, the more VR grows and the more that pressure ends up on those people where they're just seeing it more and more in their daily life, that's when people start to think, okay, this particular bullet point is now very important weight on that scale when I'm balancing these two, and I need to do it. And if Apple's not going to do it, I need to jump over there because there's these experiences I'm missing out on. It really depends. How Apple's not going to do VR if it doesn't go big. If they don't see millions of people in VR and growing, they're just not going to touch it. They don't do stuff unless they think they can make a really big play out of it.
So let me pick your brain here, Ben, because you said millions of people in VR. Let's be honest. I mean, you and I both have a good, I would say, finger on the pulse of the industry. Do we have millions of people in VR yet? And will we have millions? I mean, what are the real, not ridiculously just absurd marketing analytics from some company who's never – I've never heard of this company before, and suddenly they're all over Twitter telling us what the numbers are. What are your numbers?
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. So I think what you're alluding to and what I agree with is that a lot of the kind of popular projections out there, the one that gets headlines about how big a market VR is going to be, you know, in 2020 or 2025 or even this year or next year, are just way they're not necessarily out of proportion, but the timeline is way too aggressive. So I think some of these are more accurate in terms of where it'll ultimately end up in terms of usership, but they're just like some companies are saying, oh, there's going to be several million headsets out there in 2016, which is ridiculous depending upon what you're counting. So Google says that they have more than 5 million cardboard headsets out there, but it's like, you really have to take that with a grain of salt because we don't have any idea how often people are actually using their cardboard devices. So they say they have 5 million or so out there. I have one sitting on my desk that they just handed me at Google I.O. last week, and that's like the 10th one that I've got.
Only 10?
I tend to refuse and avoid them because I just, there's no sense
clutter
in going up one. But yeah, so it's like if those 5 million people are like me and all have 10, then that number is not very useful. And I very, very rarely use cardboard. So what are the real numbers? The best indication that we have, kind of the only official figure we have so far, is that Oculus and Samsung recently announced that last month they had more than 1 million users, unique users, use the headset over the course of a month. That's a pretty big win. Granted, that did come kind of probably at the climax of their giveaway, where they were giving away the device with pre-orders of their new Samsung phones. So that may be, we may see that not continue to grow in the near term, just because it will have been that month that a lot of people got it, said, tried it. Okay, neat, but maybe didn't return to it. So yeah, it really depends what you're counting. If you take cardboard out of the equation, which I tend to, because it's just it's just almost not even really representative of what, you know, serious VR is, then you cut out immediately 5 million, headsets, Google would say, of what's out there. And now you're looking at Gear VR, you're looking at Rift, you're looking at Vive, and then PSVR coming later in the year. So between all of those, you know, it feels like 3 million-ish, maybe. Not kind of the 6 to 10 million that a lot of projections are putting out there. So yeah, I'll leave it at that for now.
I think a big piece of it is the PSVR. I think that's the sleeping giant, not because it's the superior product, not because of anything, you know, insider info. I just simply feel like that headset is going to help mainstream VR. It's going to come out, it's going to be all over the ads, and assuming that they can maintain stock levels as some other headset manufacturers could not, we will have a huge onslaught of VR by the beginning of next year, because a lot of people are going to end up getting it for Christmas this year for their PlayStation 4. A lot of spoiled little entitled children are going to, or adults are going to end up with it under the Christmas tree this year. And I think it's going to play well for maintaining that expectation that VR is going to hit mainstream. I don't think 3 million is unrealistic for the end of 2016, but I'll definitely say it's going to be over 10 million by the end of 2017. I have no reason to suspect it would be anything less than 10 million.
Yeah, I think that is certainly within the realm of possibility. It's really just, I think, a question of kind of manufacturing at this point. I think a lot of the projections out there maybe were focused more on demand than they were actual ability to create all the devices, which, of course, we've seen, you know, some companies have had some trouble at this point getting them out there. And really, these things have launched later than kind of a lot of those early projections, I think, we're expecting to be really at the beginning, you know, toward the beginning of the year. But whatever way it happens, I think there's a lot of exciting stuff coming down the road, especially Daydream, which we haven't talked at all about and probably should talk about. Can you give me your take on Daydream?
First thing I did when I saw that was go find the Daydream Believer music video by the Monkees and posted that on Twitter, and I don't think anybody got the joke. But yeah, no, I'm all for it. Yeah, too soon. No, I think it's an amazing thing. I laughed at the fact that so many news portals and outlets had reported on an Android VR headset. I laughed a lot. Mm-hmm. I poked fun before and after. I knew that there wasn't going to be a headset, because if there had been, people would have known and leaked about it, and I hadn't heard a damn thing. So, I don't know if it would have been smart for Google to have released an actual personalized headset. I like the idea of them creating an architecture, of creating a way to essentially CarMac the Android operating system without CarMac, which is kind of what they're trying to do. And I think that's really neat. It's still not going to be ideal, but it's definitely it puts Android capabilities in between what Cardboard is now and what Gear VR is right now. And I think that's a very exciting thing.
Now, what makes you say that it'll be between? Because my sense is that it will be not between, but it will be Gear VR level.
Okay, so this is all based on a conversation that I had with John Carmack earlier this year. is I even asked him, I said, so what if they give the, basically if Android comes out with what Android is coming out with, would that be enough to get it up to Gear VR level? And he kind of giggled a little bit and he said, no, that it's not going to ever be as good as Gear VR. And so I have to take the man's word for it, that they can get close, but they're never going to achieve that type. And I think part of it is because of whatever sensors they're using in the Gear VR, whatever Oculus Mojo. And like I said, they're trying to CarMac the device without actually CarMacing it. So you're trying to duplicate and reverse engineer a concept. I don't believe it's the same. And so they will get close, but they will never truly achieve or surpass what Gear VR's capabilities are.
I can't say I really agree with that. You know, as much respect as I have for CarMac as a developer and what he was able to do on Gear VR was you know, ahead of its time in many ways, I don't see any reason, you know, I don't think he has magic code which cannot be, you know, or an experience that can't be created without his touch. And, you know, frankly, there's lots of people working on Gear VR. It's not 100% his work. I don't really see any reason why, especially if Android, you know, Google is the one that owns the operating system, that they can't do essentially the same things that Oculus and Samsung have been able to do. I think his point may be, and this is just speculation, but it may be the very close kind of work that they've done between the firmware, the Android custom firmware for Gear VR, and the phone itself. So they're looking at, you know, I think it's probably saying, well, we're looking at just a very specific phone and optimizing super heavily for one phone, or a very, you know, small number of phones specifically from Samsung. And Samsung has the ability to, you know, talk very closely to the hardware and all that stuff. It's that very careful coordination between the development of the hardware and software that's made Gear VR so good. Whereas Android, of course, they want to be much more broad than that. They want, you know, a whole bunch of Daydream ready phones, they're calling them. But, you know, I think if they maintain the specs correctly and only certify the right phones for that and ensure that developers have built into those phones the things that they need, the sensors and the screens and all that, I feel, and, you know, fingers crossed, that it can make an experience that's as good as Gear VR. I hope that it's that, because that would be amazing to have in the pockets of more than just people with Samsung Gear VR compatible phones.
Well, I'm going to say something that I never thought I'd say. I really hope John Carmack's wrong and that Ben Lang is correct. No, I really do. I hope you are right. Yeah.
It's not, because it's like, yeah, Carmack does amazing work, but it's not wizardry. I think with enough, you know, enough Google R&D, Carmack set. I don't want to overcredit him. Samsung and Gear VR and Oculus set the bar for mobile VR with Gear VR. There's no doubt about that. I think that Google has the resources behind them to be able to recreate an experience that is just as good. And like I said, that would be amazing, because Google is saying, they're saying that they want hundreds of millions of Daydream ready devices out there in the next couple of years. And they want to achieve that by just, you know, having most phones kind of in a couple of years be meeting the Daydream ready spec. And that would be huge for VR. That could totally, totally change our projections that we just talked about if they succeed.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think so too. I mean, I really think it's a huge benefit. And, you know, whether Carmack's a wizard or some supreme being from another astral plane, we don't know this. But you're right. There's probably, you know, there's probably a lot of stuff that is going on. And of course, Android, you know, having Google's backing and Android pushing, I mean, you know, it went from being almost a mockery when they threw cardboard at us that first year at I.O. And it's like, here's our VR, piece of cardboard with some plastic lenses. And everybody kind of laughed and said, that's kind of insulting. And now we find out that they are putting huge amounts of resources toward this. It's really encouraging to know that they see the writing on the wall and they know that this is something that they can't ignore, unlike, you know, other companies like Apple.
Well, I think one of the most interesting little hints that we saw at Daydream is that they talked about these Daydream Ready phones launching later this fall. And among the various manufacturers that they said are working on Daydream Ready phones is Samsung.
Yeah, that did kind of surprise me a bit. Well, I guess it shouldn't say surprise me, but I went, huh, neat. Hmm. You know, it didn't, because obviously Samsung's not going to be left behind on something like that. Just despite that they have this proprietary system, they also want to be used for everything else. And it's very open-minded of them to have that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're one of, you have to step back and say, the relationship between Samsung and Google on Android is way more important about their phones than Gear VR is just a nothing. If they had to just destroy Gear VR entirely to maintain, you know, for whatever reason, sacrifice the kind of the VR vision of their specific platform to maintain the close relationship they have, you know, with Android and Google, they would do it, because at this point it's just a tiny, tiny little fraction of their overall business, which is enabled by their partnership with Google through Android.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I have a feeling that we're going to see a lot of really interesting stuff come out in the next couple months. And I know that a few of us who got our Note 4s when they first came out, bleeding edge, we're done with our AT&T 2-year contract or whatever. So we'll be able to upgrade very soon. So kind of excited about that.
Definitely.
Yeah, you know, Ben, it's really kind of a shame. You know, this has been a great conversation. I really kind of wish we had done more of these over the course of time. And who knows, maybe we'll do some more down the road. But, you know, I feel like you guys have a really good partner in Kent Bai. I know Kent and I have done quite a bit together. We've covered expos and conventions, and we've worked together with some things like VR casters, which may be resurrected soon here. You know, it's good that you guys have, you know, Kent Bai, Road to VR, it's a good combo. I think I want to encourage everybody to, you know, don't feel like you're missing out on podcasts just because I'm not on Road to VR anymore, because you've got Kent there. I encourage you to go and listen to him. And you know, don't take me off your list yet. You know, I'm still going to be releasing some stuff. You just have to kind of stay tuned and see what kind of metamorphosis I may be going through here very soon. Ben, do you have any parting words of wisdom in terms of this conversation?
Well, not a lot of wisdom, but it's always been fun. I mean, whether it's been on the air or plenty of conversations you and I have had off the air, which are just like this, trying to wrap our heads around everything that's happening. I imagine that even if they're not recorded, we'll have plenty of these in the future, and maybe we will find an opportunity to do them again in one form or another. As the VR medium continues to explode, I imagine I'll be seeing you in the metaverse, as it will. But yeah, we've really appreciated having the RevVR podcast go through, you know, be published through Road to VR, and hope that that's been a very helpful thing for you. And we've certainly enjoyed it, and we'll miss having you, but hope to see you again in one way or another.
Well, I really appreciate that, Ben. Yes, thank you, you know, for sharing your audience with me and, you know, helping me push my opinions out into the community. It has been an honor serving with you and the rest of the Road to VR team. You know, I don't want to leave anybody out. The whole team has been wonderful and amazing to work with. And, you know, best of luck to everyone. I do want to let everybody know that this will be the last episode that I will be using the disclaimer. The disclaimer that Ben made me put on the end of my podcast. And, you know, someday we'll tell that story. That's a really funny joke story about how all that went down. So, all right, Ben, well, I'll be posting this on the website very soon.
Sounds good, man. Well, thanks for another great conversation. And this may be a bit of a goodbye for the podcast, but I'll probably talk to you in the next few days.
Absolutely, man. All right. Thanks. All right. And everyone, thank you very much for listening.
All data and information provided on the RevVR podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only. This podcast makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, correctness, suitability, or validity of any information discussed. Comments and views expressed on the RevVR podcast are the sole opinions of Reverend Kyle or his guests and are not necessarily shared by Road to VR or its affiliates.